Happy Tuesday. Oh my gosh, it's kind of weird to be back. All of the episodes you've been hearing so far in January were recorded before I got married and went on sabbatical and honeymoon and all those things. And now I'm back from my honeymoon, still on sabbatical, popping in a little bit because I didn't get all the episodes I needed to recorded before I went on it. So if it's all right with you, I thought it might be fun to give a little bit more of an extended personal update before getting into today's episode, the interview with Kyle, who is just incredible, which, by the way, I'm not offended at all. If you want to skip ahead a few minutes, no worries at all if you're not interested in my personal updates. I don't want to have you miss a minute of all the good stuff from what Kyle shared about his incredible, unique, so fun and profound journey of transitioning from being in tech consulting to being a financial advisor. So please feel free to skip ahead a few minutes if you'd like to go into that first. But if not, wait, one more disclaimer before I go into the personal update before the interview, LOL, convoluted, is I recorded this episode with him February 6th, 2023. Yep, that's right. That's about a year ago, which is so embarrassing. That just tells you, excuse me. That just tells you how many client success story interviews I have been sitting on as I was working through more of the internal growth and dealing with a team of one, me becoming a team of two last year. So very sorry, but I already checked with all the clients and made sure that it was still good to share their interview. So just a quick update of where the context of this interview is. We recorded it when Kyle was still in the latter phases of the interview process with Edward Jones when becoming a financial advisor. He has now obviously moved through that with flying colors, and I caught up with him a bit over email, and he's doing so well, and I'm so happy for him. So, excuse me. I think that we'll have to have him back to talk about all the other profound lessons he's learned in the last year since recording this, but there's still so much good stuff. And I think it's even more important to record with someone when they're really, really fresh off of all the thoughts that they had when they were making their career transition. So excited for you to get to hear that. Otherwise, the personal updates I promised. Can I just say how freaking cool it was to have a whole table at my wedding that, at least on my internal notes when I was making the the seating chart, it was called the client table, and Audrey was at that too, and it was so fun. She just got to catch up with all these people that she also, like, along with me, got to serve some of them. And it actually, my second maid of honor, because I kind of had like a Kirsten was the first one. The second one was Ava. I don't know if you remembered my episode with her probably 2 years ago now. She was the structural engineer turned UX researcher. And that was just an absolutely amazing testimony. So after we work together, we both live in Austin. Over the last 2 years, she's literally one of my best friends in the world. And like, I'm hanging out with her we're co-working all day tomorrow, and it's just so fun. So, and a lot of the toasts that people decided to give at the, we had not just a rehearsal dinner. We did have a rehearsal dinner the Friday, like the day before the wedding, over on New Year's weekend. But that was like 2 hours. And then after that, we had an open reception party for all the out of town guests. So they just like all joined in on it. And it was so, so fun to do it that way, because that way I got to catch up with more people instead of like when I'm wearing a wedding dress being like, hey, I haven't seen you in a year. How's it going? You know, so I got more of that relational experience that I know Kevin and I were both hoping for. But at that time, people were open, like there was an open mic and people were sharing like amazing toasts, and it was just hilarious. It became kind of a joke of like my pipeline from like Google to client, like somebody finds me on Google, then client to friendship, friendship to like life best buddy. And it was just amazing. Of course, I don't co-opt all people and force them to become my friend, but it's just like, Kyle's one of those people too, that he was just such an absolute joy to get to see through his journey. And we like thoroughly worked, we met like every single week for 6 months, because we definitely took our time with this one, and there was twists and turns that you're going to hear about that are so cool. But otherwise, some other aspects to the personal update I was going to give, which I'm happy to talk about that more if there's any questions. I don't know if that seem relevant or interesting to you, because it's such a miracle story in meeting my husband, like so, so crazy. Even today, one of my best friends and my bridesmaids, Shannon, she sent me the screenshot of a private like photo message I sent her on Instagram. And I was like, SOS help. I'm like such a like thirsty Christian gal. I wish like I could just be married already. And she was like, LOL, check this out from 170 weeks ago. And I was just like, first off, absolutely mortified, because I thought she was screenshotting something from my stories. But I was like, praise God, that was just a message between you and I. I was like, wow, I didn't know I got that honest on Instagram stories. Which the humor of sharing this on a podcast is not lost on me. But anyway, it's just like such a miracle that and it's made me want to contend so, so much more. Like, some of my personal goals this year are literally to pray until some of my friends like get the husband that they're praying for, or pray until they get the baby that they're hoping for. And this weekend, our wedding weekend was just such a testimony, where like in our whole ceremony, in our vows, like we shared so many things about how this isn't like just, I don't know, two people who are 30 and 33, like, yeah, finally settling down. It's like, wow, I dreamed of you my whole life, and like God did not disappoint. It's just so awesome. So our honeymoon was awesome. We went to Italy. And another kind of last part of the personal update that I'll share is, you might have heard me drop the term sabbatical, because really it was about 2 years ago now that I started planning. I guess maybe she was feeling prophetic. I was like, one day I trust that I am going to get married. And this is like so far in advance of, I guess, when I met Kevin, because we dated 9 months and then got engaged, and then we were engaged for 5.5 months. Until we got married, which, by the way, can I please say, do not let anyone, like, seriously, this gets my blood boiling. Do not let anyone bully you into thinking, oh, you have to plan weddings a year in advance. No good vendors will be left. That is not true. I felt like I got first pick of like every single vendor that I wanted. And God worked out so many miracles of even like getting not a ton of discounts, but like discounts on some things. And it was just so awesome. Like, I would not have wanted my engagement to be a day longer than 5.5 months. Honestly, I got so bored with it. I was like, can I like get back to work? This, like, I'm so sick of like working on timelines and seating charts. And I would really like to focus on like, no offense, but like bigger things. So yeah, for anybody who's like wanting a shorter engagement, please don't let anybody make you think that there's like scarcity out there or that you can't do that. But anyway, so about 2 years ago, I started planning for one day I would take a 1 month sabbatical. And what helped me and inspired me to do that is the book Clockwork by Mike Michalowicz. I actually have this in my vacation autoresponder email that's going out to everyone still right now, because I'm still on sabbatical technically, though I wanted to keep my commitment to the podcast. So since I didn't get it all done beforehand, I'm happy to pop back on and publish one of these. But anyway, so that book like really changed my life, because it helped me start laying the groundwork, and it recommends that you do actually prepare 18 months in advance as a small business owner to be able to pull this off. And so if you're not a small business owner, obviously that book is not for you, but it was just such a, maybe it's an inspiring topic, and I'm sure that you can plan for that, if possible, with your own boss and see if that's a possible thing. But it's just been amazing because I was like, when else am I getting married? And also, like, I can do this. There's proven, like, strategies for you to be able to create a runway for this to be possible. So I am going to do it. And I didn't start planning this when I was dating or engaged. I did it, like, way before. So, yeah, it's just been really, really cool to get to take this opportunity. And I guess it kind of ended up being 5 weeks since between Christmas and New Year's. I definitely was still doing some work, and I still kind of am now, but, like, for the most part, I'm off for 5 weeks, and it's so, so cool. Anyway, so, by the way, I'm not saying self-employment is, like, the way to live this life, honestly. To start a business, you're probably going to lose a bunch of money at first, so if anything, you could probably just start saving up for 18 months and come out just fine and, like, ask your boss if you could take the, like, they don't have to pay you for a month if you don't have all that PTO, and you'll still come out probably about the same. But anyway, just food for thought. I always like sharing this stuff just in case it sparks some cool thoughts in you too. And if you have any questions about that, I am a bit more active on Instagram these days, so you could hit me up at Kelsey_thecalledcareer. I'm going to be sharing more there and on some other places that I'll announce, because my big word for the year is creator. I'm really, really excited to just get into creation mode, because even more than coaching, I had some big realizations about that throughout this sabbatical. Even more than coaching, I feel like my gift is just to create something from nothing. And so I'm focusing on that a lot, even as I, like, redecorate the house to turn it from a boy house, LOL, Kevin. Everything is, like, gray and navy, and it's killing me on the inside, but he is so graciously letting me decorate it to where it looks like a unicorn exploded in here, and he loves it, for the record. Part of that is doing this podcast. So Audrey, we had an hour long catch up today, because I was like, I know I'm still technically on break, but I can't help it. Can we please talk? And we had a little State of the Union, and she's doing amazing. And it's just so, so freaking exciting to get to hear about all the ways that she's just been a total boss and an amazing steward of every single person who loves trusting her and loves working with her too, alongside me. If anything, I'm just so glad that I did the sabbatical to see her, like, rise up as a total hero. It's amazing. But I talked with her today, and she was like, hey, don't forget, like, people still tell me all the time, like, they're listening to the podcast, like, this matters. And I'm like, really? I don't know. I'm like a small fry. Like, who cares? So anyway, that was kind of the word I needed today to say, like, no, I'm going to pop back in from my little break and hit publish on this today. I hope that this blesses you. I know that it will, just because Kyle is such a profound thinker, and the way that he shares about the twists and turns in his story, honestly, and the theological lessons he learned from that. It's such a special opportunity to get to hear from someone like him. So please enjoy, without further ado, Kyle.
Kyle.
Yes.
Welcome. The day has come.
Yes.
We're, by the way, did you ever picture doing this? If the answer is no, this is going to be one sad start off to a little podcast. But if I wonder if one day I'll get to share my wrap up on the podcast.
I mean, I don't know if I thought I was going to be on the podcast, but I definitely was looking forward to a day where I could wrap up, you know, kind of at least this part of the story for sure.
Yes.
Extra bonus and extra excited that I get to be on the podcast. That's cool.
I'm excited for people to hear about your story, because it's so relatable in so many ways. First off, to me, because I know that we initially connected because we were both had this consulting background.
Yes.
So you reached out and you're like, oh, maybe she'll understand.
Yes.
So there's so much to dive into with your story, from overcoming the analysis paralysis and big theological questions too, of like, how the heck do I even think about finding my calling? Do I have one? Also, how you thought you had to overcome diminishing your talents in light of always focusing on what else you needed to work on about yourself. And sometimes I think that we get caught in that personal development trap. So there's so many things that I'm excited to talk about. First, let's start with, what were you doing when before you reached out, and what are you going for now?
So when I reached out, and what I'm actually still technically currently doing is I'm in consulting, and I'm in particular consulting, you could call it strategy consulting, and that's in my title, but we do a lot of process design or service design for different teams who, you know, maybe just they know the way that they're working is ineffective or messy, or they've got problems, but they're not really sure why, and the stuff that they've tried doesn't work. And so we do a ton of research. It's very like a very fluid process kind of consulting. So it's a little different what my background is, but we just kind of go in and do a bunch of research and figure out what is it that's making a team struggle and hate their work and get frustrated. And we try and help them create new processes and ways of working to get out of that. So that's what I'm doing now. And what I'm going to be doing, hopefully, because technically I'm still in the process, is become a financial advisor.
No, it's looking good.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I interrupted your grand reveal.
Oh, that's okay.
Well, your recruiting process.
Yes, going through the recruiting process. Yes, and hopefully, at the end of this process and at the end of my training, I'll be a financial advisor in a few months. Yeah.
Amazing. Very exciting. So, you know, the first question that comes to mind that I feel might be on the minds of some listeners as well, when you were describing what you do with consulting.
Yeah.
That sounds so cool. And it is. Oh, here's my cat. I can see yours in the background.
Yeah. They're hanging out together. There he is.
What's up? So that sounds so cool. And that is somebody else's ideal job.
Yeah.
There's something for everybody. But what, if you're open to sharing, made you realize that it's best to look for something else for your longer term vision?
Yeah. You know, that's really tough. And I think for my guess would be for a lot of people who went into consulting, there's probably a few different flavors, but some of the major flavors are like, I'm getting into consulting because the money and the, you know, I get to travel if you're into that. And it's a stepping stone, but really it's like a stepping stone onto something else, right? For a lot of people. And I think for some of us, we got into consulting because it legit on paper looked really awesome. And in many ways it is. And in many ways, like you were saying, seems like it should be an ideal fit for me, just in terms of I love learning lots of different things. I love solving problems. I love working with people and trying to help them. And, you know, I'm in the tech space a lot, so I like working in tech. Although I've gotten to do some retail stuff, and that's also been interesting. So it feels like it should be a really great fit. But I think there are just a few key things that, you know, over the 8-ish years I've been a consultant in 3 different firms, I think by the time I got to this 3rd firm, which is so different from the first firm I started in, and it still wasn't working, there were just some things that I was just like, okay, why don't I want to do this? I think for me, I'm the kind of person who is very affected by the people and the environment around me. And so it's been always difficult, this tension between I have my company and they have their company, like the clients have their company. And I can never really fully be in one or the other. When you try to be fully in your own consulting firm's kind of company, you kind of start to drop the ball on the client. You don't really like, you have to invest your brain fully in them in order to relate to them and, you know, understand what their needs are and, you know, to feel motivated to actually work on their stuff. But you're never really fully part of their team, no matter how nice that client is and how welcoming they are and how much they treat, you know, I've had the blessing of not having any clients that really treated me like, you know, oh, you're just a vendor, you're not really part of this team, thankfully. And so, but you're never fully on that team. And I think that was a big tension that just starts to wear on you. And a lot of my friends felt the same way, just never feeling like you were fully on a team. Mm-hmm. And mentally, that also has takes a toll too, if you're just kind of doing double duty in your brain all the time. I think the other thing too is, and I think we talked about this, it seems really trivial, but timesheets.
No, seriously, everybody I have supported who is in some kind of professional service, engineering, yes, law, consulting, they're like, the freaking timesheets. It's dehumanizing.
And it's just different than like clocking in and clocking out in any other context. It's this idea that you're supposed to be meeting this threshold of hours, and there's a stress of like, well, what happens if I go over them? Or if I go under them, I am actually doing less work. Well, what if I'm just more efficient and I do my work faster? Am I cheating the client because I can't remember how many hours exactly I did? You know, this is this constant like stress. And there's all sorts of memes all over the place with consultants about timesheets. So I think other consultants can relate. And I think ultimately too, there's a challenge in consulting where you never quite get to propose the solutions that you really think are best for the client. Like you're always kind of pulling your punches and held back, but because ultimately, rightfully so, it's the client's call. But as an external person who often can see a little bit more of the bigger picture, or maybe can see the things that clients eventually become blind to or too accustomed to, it gets really tough to just kind of, you don't really have that ownership or that level of expertise to be able to say, you know what, I think this is really going to hurt you if you make this decision, or if you don't go down this path. And as someone who likes to solve problems, it really wears on you when you never fully get to try that thing. And then you get to watch this sort of like less than ideal solution roll out, and it doesn't quite work. And you just kind of like are, you know, you feel bad because it didn't, you know, come to fruition, but you also know that there was nothing, you did everything you could to try and convince them to do the right thing. And just seeing that happen over and over and over again.
That makes total sense. But I do feel like you deserve a big high five because you lasted way long. Well, for whatever it's worth, you have lasted way longer than the average person.
That's true. That's true.
So what were some of your biggest challenges that you were facing as you were trying to resolve the question on your own?
Sure.
Of what am I really, really called to do? What's the next best career move that would be most meaningful to me? What were you trying in order to figure that out on your own? How was it going? And what were some of your challenges?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I would say I like many consultants, about the 2-year mark into consulting, everyone starts to think about what the next step is, whether you like consulting or not. And so I guess maybe 6 years ago, I've been doing this kind of analysis loop of what should I do, doing informationals, and then sort of oscillating between like apathy of like, it doesn't matter what I do, I should just do a good job that pays the bills and is roughly interesting, and then swing the pendulum the other way, like, no, I'm wasting my life, I need to find out my life's one purpose, this only purpose that could possibly exist for me, and I'm going to figure this out. And doing everything from mind mapping to personality tests to reading books to talking to people and doing informationals to, you know, praying about it, tons of journaling about it. And then, you know, trying not to think about it also, like trying to do nothing. And
just invest in hobbies and stuff.
Yeah. And just, or try to like, you know, there have definitely been times where I poured myself into my consulting career and tried to see like, can I make this work? And, you know, becoming a manager and doing that and really investing in that was cool. And then just kind of hitting another wall there and realizing, no, I don't think this is going to work. So a lot of just round and round in circles and ups and downs, before I was kind of, I don't even remember what triggered it. that caused me to look for a
career coach. Before you typed into Google, Christian.
Literally. So kudos to you and your SEO game, because woo! Number one hit at the top of my search for Christian career coach was Kelsey Kemp. And this is not like me. I'm an overanalyzer. I will research the heck out of every purchase over $50 for weeks. And for some reason, with you, it was like, oh, that was the first hit. I think I searched and looked at two or three more later after that, and it just, I didn't want to do it. So that's kind of where I came to was, I've been on this cycle for 6 years and I'm not going anywhere, and I'm just getting stressed out and older. And so it was worth it to try something different and to ask for help. Oh, I remember. I think I had actually heard a different podcast, and I can't remember the guy's name, but he's a little bit popular right now, but about coaching and about how athletes get coached even after they're, the superstar, the LeBron James or the Kobe Bryant, they're still getting coached until they retire. And nobody else, hardly any other career or field works by that principle. And I was thinking to myself, who am I? I definitely need coaching. I'm not anywhere near Kobe Bryant or LeBron James in my field. So I think that was kind of a good key of like, I need somebody who's not just, taking advantage of a friend's free time or my wife's free time, somebody who's kind of dedicated to doing this kind of help. I think that's what triggered it.
So what started to make the difference? So, because obviously you're no longer feeling like you're stuck in that cycle.
Yeah.
You made a decision, and it was, we worked hard for it. It wasn't quick.
No.
Beep, bop, boop, a few inspiring conversations. Life realization made.
Yes.
Because we had to consider big things. Like you had there for a while, it seems like all signs pointed towards actually a long held career dream of, should I be a landscape architect? Right. You thought about that for a really long time.
Yeah.
And that can be really hard for some people to let go of when it feels like there's almost something, I don't know, the idea that's very precious to you that we realize actually isn't ultimately the best decision for your life. And then we considered another, like customer success management for a while. And then I can't wait for you to share the story at the end of like how it ended up being financial advising, and how I always say this, like we throughout the process do everything conceivable that can be our part, like us lifting up our efforts for God to bless, and every logical, practical, excellent thing that we could do in order to bring the prayed for result home. But in the end, it is God that works it together. And I felt that so hard in the way that God helped you realize that financial advising was the thing.
But
can you talk a little bit about what started to make the difference for you of how you got, I don't know what I'm doing, to now I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Coming into this, I knew it was going to be challenging because I'd bashed my head against this wall for a long time. And I was like, I hope Kelsey is ready for this, because she might have her hands full with just where my brain goes. And you've talked in your past podcasts about multi-passionate people. Which I would consider myself in that category, because I came out of high school thinking maybe I might go into architecture, but was sort of encouraged to go into engineering instead, electrical engineering. And the school that I ended up choosing, Seattle Pacific University, doesn't have an architecture program. So it was kind of, I went there and then, the architecture was sort of off the table. Ended up, not liking engineering at all. It was really not what I wanted to do. And didn't know what I was going to do, but architecture, at least in terms of an interest and how much I love the idea of creating spaces for people and the idea of, especially in landscape architecture, which came along as a passion later in life, the idea of bringing, the created natural world with the built world together to create spaces that are not only beautiful, but are good for the environment, good for people. And that was something that still interests me to this day. I'm just, there's something about going into these kinds of spaces that people have designed that's just very invigorating and inspiring to me. And so that feeling stayed with me through from high school, through college, after college, but I never really acted on it. And I did other jobs. And about 5 years ago, I got the bug again. And I actually went through the process of going to the landscape architecture school, meeting with the administrators there and finding out, what do I need to do? I enrolled in like drawing classes because that, you know, I'm weak on the art side. And so I was trying to figure out, what do I need to do to build, you know, portfolio and apply, and ended up just tabling it because we were about to have our first child. And I knew that that was just going to be too much to go to school for 3 years and late nights on projects and stuff. I just, you know, I didn't put a timetable on it. I just kind of put a pin in it and said, I guess I can't do this right now. Which some people I've heard do the opposite and really dive into that. But there was just something where, just talking with my wife, it just, especially the first child, we didn't know what was going to happen. And so it just, it wasn't a good time to do it. Mm-hmm. So when we met, that was one of the first things I brought to you, is said, I've got this career now in tech, business, consulting, marketing-ish. Mm-hmm. Here, I could continue to lean on that and go forward, or I could pursue this thing that I'm much more passionate about, but I'm so far behind. Like I'm not even started on this. Like I have no background in this. And that was a big challenge. And and you even mentioned financial advising, because just to foreshadow, my wife is in this financial advising firm already. She's been there and been very successful over the last 7+ years. So that was I knew about it, but that was not on my radar at all, even though it's within my family, it wasn't on my radar. So that's kind of where we started.
Yeah.
And in terms of the difference makers, you know, we did our module 2, module 3, and we talked through that. That was very eye-opening, but it didn't really point me in any one particular direction, which I don't think that's the point, but it was sort of like, oh, great. Now it almost brought those two things into sharper resolution of like, it's definitely, I've got to figure out which direction to go here. Mm-hmm. It's going to be one of these two directions. I think the difference maker was first the informationals.
Mm-hmm. Informational interviews.
Yeah.
Like reaching out. Can you describe a little bit more about how
made the difference? So I did my best to follow your instructions on that. I would say I didn't go maximum Kelsey Kemp on like blasting everyone, but I did enough that I was really getting quite a few hits. Uh-huh. And a lot of folks in landscape architecture who at the time were passionate about it. And so were totally willing to connect and talk about it. And the more I talked to people, the more interested I became in the field. Mm-hmm. But the more I started to realize, I don't remember when it was, but we had a conversation when there was like a little bit of the edge of a sticker coming up, where I was like, there's something there. And that was, you know, what do you do with your time as a landscape architect? Mm-hmm. And there's certainly some designing, but there's not a lot of the kind of collaboration that I think I was hoping to have. I think you see, you know, architects and landscape architects, there's like a romanticized view of them, you know, sitting around a drafting table, and there's always the video footage of them pointing at stuff and people are talking and they're making models, and they do that, but it's, you know, so much of their time is spent around permitting and doing redlining and redrawing. And I think some people really get into that detailed work. But I think for me, it really brought up the question of like, do I want to design and do this kind of stuff all the time? Mm-hmm. And there was one day where I was like going around in circles about, but landscape architecture is so good for people and it's so restorative and I love restoring things and there's so much good that you can do with it, right? Like I should do this. This is a good thing to do. And then I'd cycle around back to like, but the gifts that I've been given that we highlighted from our modules were around like connecting people and ideas and building relationships and, really getting to know people and empathizing with people. And that's just, I mean, you do some of that in landscape architecture, but that's not the emphasis. And I was back in my circle again, and you told me to stop. You're like, stop. And you had me, ask the question to God of like, what do you want me to know about this? And I took that night and I just sat there and thought about it. And for a while, maybe like 40, 45 minutes. And the thing that came away from me was, stop trying to figure this out. It's not your job to figure out the impact that you're going to have. It's not your job to figure out how to maximize the impact of your life. Mm-hmm. Your job is to abide with me, abide with Jesus, and just stick close to him, mm-hmm. and to take the gifts that I've given you and just figure out it right here, apply them. Just do, go out, the parable of the talents, just go out and do something. Don't sit there and just try and agonize over how am I going to have the maximum return for these gifts. And that certainly didn't answer everything, but that was the start. That was the first difference.
That was the start. And you were asking the right question. And I think how I would distill your story down into two key realizations that made a massive difference. One, in terms of, and this is, I'm sure, a question for the audience, like, what does spiritual formation, or like, how is the spiritual process of this work? What is that like? And then the other is, well, I'll get to the other, but the first one, you're really demonstrating that something started to shift when, and I'll just say personally, I pray with people all the time and I talk with them about, as we bump up along things that are like purely just a spiritual subject or a spiritual problem that's coming up and is not necessarily practical and we need clarity from God. I experience people, as I did in the past, praying, God, please make this clear for me. And God, would you please just show a way, make a way, whatever. God, can you please dot, dot, dot. And that's how people pray. That's how I used to pray until I came along Jamie Winship's work that I, I'm such a fan of his. And I sent you like this little playlist that I've made of all his talks and whatever. And he talks about how to hear from God and how to actually speak to God in transformational prayer. And instead of saying, God, can you please dot, 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 amen. You're not, in what part of that prayer were you actually expecting an answer?
Yeah.
Like you don't even, and I'm saying generally you, not you. It's like we don't even really want to hear from him, or we're too scared to sit there for a moment and wonder and parse through, is that God's thoughts or my thoughts? But you started praying, instead of God, can you please? You said, God, what do you want me to know about this right now? Mm-hmm. What prayers are very powerful, because you're asking for wisdom and God promises wisdom. And he also promises guidance, but as Tim Keller says, guidance is something that is what God does rather than what he gives.
Right, like, right.
He's actively guiding. He doesn't always have to tell you about it.
Right.
And so when you're like, what do you want me to know about this right now? God loves to give us insight, and he'll often just remind you that it's about a relationship.
Yes.
When you're focusing on that, often things do just align in your life. But then the other thing that your career revelation comes down to, it sounds like, is we realize that, and my cats are just coming in now. Oh my gosh, as I'm trying to make a big point. So do who you are, not what you love.
Yeah, something
like
that.
What you are, not what you love, because you're fascinated with the subject matter and the concept of landscape architecture or photography or the study of birds, literally all things that we talked about.
Yes.
But in the end, when we looked at what are the tasks that a landscape architect spends the majority of their time doing, that's not who you are.
Yeah.
You could do it for sure. And that is like the a tricky kind of, in a sense, a soft trap that most of us fall into. Like, you're smart, you can pretty much do anything you set your mind to. But if we get to be kind of playful, okay, what's the best that we could do with God? Actors in this whole game called life, then we don't have to just settle for, I'm interested in that subject and I like some of the parts of it. We could actually design around, I am a connector. We distill down for you, you're a connector of meaning. And in the end, financial advising, and you didn't come to me saying like, oh yeah, I'm obsessed with finance and like study.
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing that you're like, I can do that. That yes. The subject is something that you're like, I can do. And the tasks of constantly connecting with people and having such a meaningful part in their life in a relationship, a client relationship, where there's very much a sense of ownership, huge sense of impact. You're helping them manage and grow their wealth. That impacts generations. And you are a connector that gets to spend the majority of your time with the majority of your tasks being aligned.
Right.
You are. So how do you resonate with that?
Yeah, I think that was definitely a big distinction for me. And I think that's kind of where, so like you were saying, there was like the spiritual part of it was a big alignment, a realignment for me with God, in that he wasn't asking me to find the thing that, like I said before, maximized the results. Because I think that's what I was really, you know, racking my brain for, like, what, I don't want to work for this company because that's just about money, or that's just about being part of a prestigious brand. And so I would agonize over that. Or same thing with landscape the other way, like, oh, I feel like I should be doing something more for people and the environment. And and the resting in him was about setting aside that need to validate myself through how great or how not great that job was going to be.
Yeah.
And like you said, it was sort of the realization of, I've given you gifts to just use, and you'll find out someday, way far away, or never in this life, what that means or what the implications of that are going to be. The faithfulness I'm asking for you is not to figure that out. It's to just take what I've given you and use it. And you will discover ways that you did not predict.
Yes.
I mean, first of all, it was kind of eye-opening to me that the relationship building thing was going to be the thing. Because in high school, I was kind of like the nerdy kind of loner kid who didn't really discover, like, you know, I had to learn a whole lot of like social maturity things in like really early college, where I was just like a social baby. And so
I was homeschooled. So.
Oh, well, and I grew up in a small town and then went to a small school. So it was very, yeah, but it was definitely an eye-opening thing to realize, oh, like, who am I and what does that translate into what I want to do? So I definitely resonate with that. But it took a lot of work to split those two things, and then also to figure out what it was that, who I am, and then translate that to what do I do, and how do I separate that from what I'm interested in, which is everything. Oh, I remember the other pivotal thing was that I suddenly realized that my ability to become interested in anything was actually the gift. It wasn't the photography or ornithology or architecture or engineering, you know, it wasn't those things specifically that was like the gift. It was that I can relate to people and subjects across the spectrum. And I apply that to my ability to connect with anybody, build relationships, and connect meaning between all those things. And that was one of the eye openers, was like, it's not my interest in the subjects that's specifically telling. It is that I can be interested in this huge wide variety of subjects that I can then apply as the thing that I do.
Exactly. Yeah. And that makes that major good news for your future with financial advising.
Yeah. Like,
Yeah, I'll totally get into finance in order yes. to keep having an even better conversation and support level with the people that I'm helping. And so what would you say? Where should we take this? Like, what advice do you want to give to people who are feeling how you felt? Stuck and discouraged.
I would say to, if you're the kind of person who's stuck in some sort of analysis paralysis like I was, or maybe it's less of an intellectual figuring things out, but maybe there's some sort of guilt you have or some, or you just feel like there's something more. I think the biggest thing is that you have to come back to a place of resting in Christ, in answering that identity question of like, what am I supposed to do? Or who am I supposed to be? Like, that you already have someone you are, not there isn't, you know, that there isn't this supposed to be person. You are a person and you're always changing. And,
exactly.
And, you know, but that there's sort of like an already, there's like an already who you are.
Yes.
And stop leaning too far into like trying to figure out who you're going to be.
I love that you're saying this because it reminds me of that core theme of in the beginning, it felt like you were trying to figure out who you needed to become or yes. what you needed to work on in order to be a person that receives a calling.
Yes. Yeah. And you were saying, stop saying that about like you have, and it's not that I was perfect, but it's that I was so, my brain was so far ahead that mm-hmm. I didn't even know what I had now. And I didn't, yes. I wasn't able to take what God had given me already and understand and apply that to whatever it is. It was like, I was looking for some future version of myself that was completely fictional. Mm-hmm. And I think probably most millennials like me, or I don't know about Gen Z, but a lot of people in our generation were kind of trained to do that, like mm-hmm. look that far ahead. And so I would say there's a laying down of that and resting in like, God's going to take care of who you're going to become. You have to understand who you are and take care of that relationship with God so that you can walk with him to who you're going to become. And then I would say, yeah, I mean, if you're going around in loops, you have to seek some help. Like, I think everyone needs help, but especially if you're going around in loops and you've talked to your parents or you've talked to your siblings, or you've talked to your partner, spouse, whoever, and your friends and your boss or whoever, you've talked to all these people and you're still not getting anywhere. I think you need dedicated help to go through that. I mean, that's at least where the conclusion I came to.
That, well, just on the spiritual note of what you were saying, the line from John Piper keeps on coming to mind of God's job is faithfulness. Oh, sorry. I keep on blowing the quotes. Our job is faithfulness. God's job is fruitfulness.
Yeah.
So the results or exactly who he wanted to impact belongs to him. And if you're trying to figure out like, how can I best change the world, in some ways, considering that concept is helpful, but only to the end of like, how can I be most faithful considering right. the problem? But in the end, you could rest easy because I've even experienced like one time I absolutely blew this speech so hard. It was like the first time I was giving a talk to a large audience out of COVID. I was so socially awkward. I didn't know how to shake hands anymore. And I was surprised people did want to shake hands. And I was like, eh, I don't know. And then I like got a little out of breath as I was asked to like go up to the stage. And it was like this huge ballroom and all these creepy chairs of masked people 6 feet apart. It just made it look like a football field of intimidation. And I was like, yeah. And I don't think that was by any stretch of the imagination, even close to my best that I could have done. But then God was the one that, well, here's the first thing. If you're speaking to college students, they eat up you looking stupid because it makes them feel better about themselves. So impact achieved. too. Like, for some reason, somebody in the audience ended up really liking what I did end up sharing. And I'm pretty sure that not only were they the reason I got some other bigger speaking gig after that, but I think they're the reason I ended up getting nominated to give the TEDx talk that I'll be giving in a couple weeks. And so I couldn't predict any of that. God is just nice, is my point. And I didn't have to spend any of my time fretting of like, how can I achieve my life dream of giving a TEDx talk? Totally fine, like, to do some strategizing, but some things God is just going to give us a fat old gift. And it's going to be so that you realize that your job is faithfulness, do the best you can, but his job is fruitfulness, and he's really nice.
Yeah. And I think that's like one of the biggest temptations that we're given, especially as Christians, is to agonize over the fruitfulness. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the right thing to do. And we're just tricked into taking that job from God. And mm-hmm. and it probably starts off great and well-meaning, and it turns into, you know, obsession, or, you know, a lot of just disappointment and anxiety when you can't wring the fruitfulness out of a thing that you're trying to to get to. And it's so counterintuitive to let go of that.
Mm-hmm. The last thing I want to ask is, as someone, you're more of an idealist like me, right? Rather than just a pragmatist.
I'm a little of both. I'm like a cynical idealist.
Cynical idealist.
I don't know what that means.
Perfect. So how are you feeling, like, in terms of your future? If you started out like scared and unsure, how are you feeling about your future now with work?
Yeah. So how do you know? It feels like it happened really fast. Like, the work that you and I did spanned about 6 months.
Yes.
And so it took a long time, but the decision to become a financial advisor just like happened within like a 2 week span. Uh-huh. You know, I'd given up on landscape, I'd set landscape architecture aside very confidently. Like, that was a great, I feel good about it still. Like, I have no regrets right now, which is weird. I was able to set that aside and still enjoy it as a field, right? I still have books that I read about it and stuff, but it's like, it's over there now. And then I was pursuing customer success management and getting a few bites here, but it was just not super exciting. And, you know, there was this, a couple of events happened that just made me finally look at financial advising, even though I've been around it for the last
including your wife
years.
Making a random comment that changed.
Yeah. Do you want me to go into that story a little bit?
Okay. I loved it.
Okay.
It changed the trajectory of your life.
Yeah. So I've been married to somebody who's been a financial advisor for 7+ years, been around it. I really appreciated the brand. She works for Edward Jones, and I've just been a fan of the company and this region, but never, I mean, people have asked me like, oh, you should do it too. Like, colleagues of hers, when are you going to join? No, that's not me. I'm not a finance person, and that's her world. She's doing a great job. More power to her, but I'm good. I'm in tech and I'm in consulting. I'm going to do something else. Or I'm going to be a landscape architect. So I had kind of brushed it off for 7 years. And there were two kind of conversations that happened. One was one of her colleagues, but who's a friend first, she recruited him to join her firm, asked me again, you know, hey, you should join. When are you going to join? And I said, nah, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do customer success management, which seemed like actually another really great fit. And it probably could be. But I went home and I thought, like, why do I keep saying no? Like, what are my actual reasons for saying no? And a lot of those reasons were just sort of like, because that's Yuki's thing. That's my wife's thing. But I didn't have a better reason than that. And then the next day we were having dinner with some friends, and my wife just made a joke because it was after the holidays and it was time to go back into the office. And she made this comment. It's like, you know what? I think I could just stay home now. I'm good. I'm just going to stay home full time. And we all, you know, were just like, oh, haha, because, you know, work is hard. And I made the joke, that, hey, we should switch places. Like, I'll take your job. And she said, yeah, let's do that. And it was this very bizarre movie moment of like, I could visualize myself actually in her position doing all these things. And I was kind of filled with excitement, which was super weird. And I got really stoked about it. And I kept saying, like, would you really switch with me? And she was like, what are you talking about? It was just a joke. Like, yeah, you know, I mean, she would love to stay home full time with our kids, but at the same time, you know, she loves what she does. So we knew it was a joke. Like we knew she loved what she did. But at the same time, it like kept eating at me. And the next day I finally said, would you really, like, do you think I could do this? And she was so weirded out by that question, but we talked for a long time. And she said something like, you know, if for some reason I had to like give up my entire portfolio, there's no one I would trust more than you to take it over. And I, you know, if you knew her, like, that's the biggest compliment I've ever, like, you could ever hope to get.
Yeah, her.
Such an amazing person, and especially in her field, she just puts 100% into everything she's working on. And so I'm not like her. So that was kind of very surprising to me. And it led this journey of, okay, I'm going to explore this for reals. Like, so I asked tons of questions, probably too many questions, but I did a few more informationals. I talked to another financial advisor who is like me, was the spouse of the financial advisor first. And in a similar way was like, why not me? Why wouldn't I do this? And had said no for years and years and years. And so informational with her and then this friend who had tried to recruit me again and dug into, okay, but what do you do? Like, what do you actually do? And is that what me as a person want to do and feel called to do to apply my gifts? And in about a 2-week span, you know, I didn't need to think about it anymore. I've been around it for 7 years. So it was just kind of like we got to do. Yeah, I mean, my wife and I are still kind of getting over the weirdness of the both of us doing this at the same time. But I've gotten a ton of support from her and from a lot of other people. And the reactions I've been getting from the people I know in the region have been very encouraging. Like, they're super excited for me to join. And so now
they've been asking for ages.
They have, which
is so funny. It's like, oh, career changes are so hard. And then there's sometimes like this career path.
Oh yeah.
We're like, join us. We love you.
Well, and you know, it was kind of like, I'm putting this to the test, y'all. If you're serious, you really meant that, I'm coming. I hope you weren't joking, because I am now accepting that invitation. But yeah, it's been, I keep telling you, it feels like I'm cheating in a way, because it just feels so natural. And so like, the reception I've gotten of, yes, this would be so great. And so now what you asked originally was, what am I feeling, is impatience, because I have to go through this really long interview process and then training process. I'm just raring to go. Like, I really want to get started. I'm excited to start.
You're excited. I love it.
I'm stoked. So I'm going to try and accelerate the interview process a little bit. And I'm very excited to get started. Really want to get moving, and I'm already trying to like put my brain in that space to get ready for that.
Oh my gosh. And this is the part where all the idealists like me are just eating their hearts out.
I know.
You have a movie, literally, you described it as, quote,
a movie moment
where I realized this is what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah. And this is where I'm an idealistic cynic, or a cynical idealist, is I have those moments, those idealistic moments. And the other half of my brain goes, that is wrong because you had that. So you should avoid that, because that's too idealistic. Like, that's the voice of doubt is, this is too easy. Not easy. It makes too much sense. It's too much of a fit. It can't possibly be the right choice. And so I have to fight that a little bit. But other than that, I'm super excited.
That is something that we definitely had as a theme in our conversations of like, and many of the other people I support, it's like, first off, some people question if they really have talents, because they're so unconsciously good at something that they're, and especially like in, well, this, I don't know how global this is, but I could just speak to the culture in the West, is like, sometimes we just have to, we want to suffer for things almost.
Yeah.
And I would say that particularly might be agreeable with some undertones people pick up in Christianity, but there is suffering in this life, but God's not asking you to suffer for everything. Something seems just like slip and slide to blessing, you know?
Yeah. And there's, I think what it is too, is there's self-inflicted suffering. And then there's the suffering that comes from the natural trials and tribulations. And one of the things God, I think, showed me was like, stop creating your own suffering in this loop that I was on and trying to predict what God wanted me to do based on what the outcomes I thought I could see. Like that was just, so there was artificial suffering, right? That was suffering that I didn't need to be experiencing. There will be plenty of other suffering. There has been plenty of other suffering in other areas that come at me. But I didn't need to invent this suffering.
Nope.
That was unnecessary. Yeah.
Nope. I feel like that's low key my day job, trying to get people to like step out of the drama.
For sure.
Like our stories. What was that? Okay, I'm going to try one more quote and let's see how I land it. It's going to be like Socrates or something who said this. there's much suffering in this life, most of which only exists within the confines of our minds.
Yeah, that's, at least in this situation, that's definitely the case.
Oh my gosh, should we end on that note? And give you a big congrats on all... Like, and you told me this before, of it takes hard work to participate with God in this journey. You didn't just roll up and pray once, God, can you please deliver me to a job that I really feel is like a meaningful expression of who I was created to be. And it was like, boom, shakalaka. You had to really, like, you went through a refinement process to get gear. And like you said, that was 6 months. And so I really want to commend you for all the work that you put into this. I know that God is so pleased in you. Well, if I could say that, I don't know the mind of God. I feel like he is pleased in you for that. And I could just say personally, it's been so encouraging to me to get to watch you go through this process. And I can only imagine how encouraging this is to the many who are listening and resonating with what you said. So thank you, because you definitely had to show up and go through some hard ups and downs in order to be the kind of person who could tell a testimony like this. So thank you for sharing your testimony with us.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for your coaching and sticking with me for 6 months. And
are you kidding me? I was always excited to log on to our calls.
Oh, good. Yeah, me too. They were a big uplift to my week every week. So thank you.
Oh, well, you're the best, Kyle, and I will talk to you soon. Maybe you'll have to come back on and tell us the update after your
life. I feel like I need to. I technically
baller in financial advising.
I will. Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. Talk to you soon then.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. To get an even more meaningful head start into your calling, head to thecalledcareer.com, where my fellow career coach Audrey and I have created a whole suite of free resources and tools to help you get clear and get a job today. For those who are definitely ready to land a job or start a business in the next 6 to 12 months, we are here to help you biblically and practically discern your calling through coaching, reflection, and deep market research, identify the job that's aligned with it, even if you currently have no idea what you want, rebrand your resume and LinkedIn to translate your background to appeal to your future boss. P.S. We take this off your plate and do this for you. Also, we'll teach you how to land referrals and get attention from leadership through networking. Again, if that makes you nervous, we have these emails and LinkedIn messages literally written for you so you don't have to sweat. We're also here to give you unlimited interview practice so you're prepared to address every elephant in the room and knock selling yourself out of the park. Then we'll round out with helping you negotiate your salary so you land thousands more. Just so you know, recent clients have gotten $8,000 to $50,000 salary increases, even though they were totally non-traditional candidates. That's because we specialize in helping non-traditional career pivoters land jobs they're ecstatic to serve in. It takes work, but we're here to see you through until the end, when we're celebrating that day that you send me an email in all caps and you say, Kelsey, I got the job. then you could be on the podcast. But I'll be here until then, keeping you accountable and encouraged by meeting with you literally until you land the job you want, even if that's up to 6 months from now within our program. Apply to join at thecalledcareer.com, and I'll see you next week here at Answer the Call. Bye for now.